Ave Maria Stella, Dei Mater Alma.
Welcome everybody to another edition of the Sensus Fidelium Hour. This is your host Steve Cunningham with Sensus Fidelium YouTube channel, sensusfidelium.com. Anyway, I had an interview with Joshua Charles on a new book of his, not his, he edited it, republished, The War of the Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization by Monsignor George Dillon. He is an Irish priest. We'll get into that. And Leo XIII endorsed this. So it was a cool book, interesting topic, and I figured I'd play a little bit of that interview. Go figure, right? You're probably going, ha, shucks, how'd you, I could have guessed that. Well, here it is.
Ave Maria Stella.
It's my intro. Sorry about that. I should have started earlier.
Ave semper virgo, felix
stella. Welcome everybody for another quote unquote book review. It's a book review, but not a book review. It falls in both the resistance and the book review, because this is about the book The War, if I could speak, of the Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization by Monsignor Dillon, which is not the guy to your right.
It's not.
Joshua Charles, how you doing? He's the one that picked the book out, re-edited it. You probably, if I'm incorrect, that this is the full book, that there's a kind of like a carve-out version or a bridge version. So you found this one and decided to edit it out and put it in and get it back in print. So first off, thank you for doing it. Welcome to the program. How are you? How are you doing? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, Steve. Your channel has not only played a huge role in my conversion. I came from Protestantism, came into the church in 2019. But just honestly, ongoing Catholic life, or when fellow Catholics or Protestants or whatnot ask me questions about the Catholic, seem to not only predict a lot of what had happened in the last century, but especially what was happening in our day. Again, quite possibly. I mean, if people want to disagree with me, fine. But I was blown away by it, and I was thinking this needs to be republished immediately. And the short version is that in 1884, Pope Leo XIII, who, by the way, endorsed this book, Pope Leo XIII wrote Humanum Genus, his great encyclical on Freemasonry. And at the end of that encyclical, he called on Catholics everywhere, particularly the clergy, to tear off the mask of Freemasonry. And so later that year, I believe the Humanum Genus was in April 84. Later that year, Monsignor Dillon, who was an Irish priest, who was a missionary for many years in Australia, he was back in the British Isles and delivered some lectures on Freemasonry in pursuit of that papally prescribed goal of tearing off the mask of Freemasonry. And that's what this book is. He reduced it to a book, and it was published the following year. Pope Leo XIII endorsed it. He paid for its translation and the printing of several thousand copies in Italian. And it's an amazing book. You know, there are probably some details in it, and I note this in the introduction. I'm not here to say Monsignor Dillon got every single last iota right. But in the main, he outlines an occult Freemasonic agenda to not only attack the church, but as the title itself says, Christian civilization, overturn Christendom. And, you know, there's many details to this. There's two extremes I want to avoid, and it's a big reason behind why I think the republishing of this book is important. One, there are a whole set of Catholics out there who, anytime you bring up the topic of Freemasonry, they immediately dismiss it as, oh, that's just conspiracy theory, that tinfoil hat nonsense, whatever. Well, to that, I would say, if that's going to be your position, then you must necessarily also contend that numerous supreme pontiffs of the Catholic Church were tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists. If you are willing to do that at the same time as you just claim this is all just conspiracy theory, fine. I accept your position. It's intellectually coherent.
I have my papal tiara ready to go.
you no wonder you were putting me on the screen so you could do so. Yeah, no, but that's what a lot of them do. They just simply dismiss it. And again, if you're willing to accept that centuries worth of popes are also tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists, then be my guest. I don't. And a lot of what popes like Leo XIII especially describe, and I provide many examples of it in the introduction, I kind of collate everything that they said on these things. It's extremely revealing, I would say. There's a lot going on that matches. And so, and then on the other extreme, there are some Catholics who think there's a Freemason under every rock. And that's not true either. You know, we Catholics are more than capable of being our own worst enemy. As Steve, I'm sure you know yourself, I'm still a relatively new Catholic, and I know that too. I was brought to the church through studying history primarily. So when I came into the church, I was under no illusions that everything in the church was always peaceful and amicable. I just was sponsoring two ex-Mormons into the church this past Easter Vigil. Beautiful people have made a lot of sacrifices to come into the true church. But I whispered to them, they had been baptized and they receive our Lord in the Eucharist for the first time. And I whispered to the mother, as a mother and son, I whispered to her, "Welcome to the biggest, most dysfunctional family in the world." And so on the other, you know, we have plenty of dysfunction on our own apart from Freemasonry. And Leo XIII even says this, you know, we can't blame every problem in the church on Freemasonry. You know, we Catholics are more than capable through our own free will of falling into mortal sin, falling into venial sin. So that's the other extreme. And I hope that the Overton window of the discussion is adjusted with this book, because there are some very, very serious things. I think, you know, my personal opinion is a lot of things that this book describes are culminating in our day. Maybe it'll fizzle out and the outcome will not be as eschatological as it sometimes seems. But I'm not dogmatic about these things. But at the end of the day, I hope both extremes are kind of quieted a bit, and we can have a more substantive discussion about not just the historicity of these things, but the philosophical and even the theological substance of it. There's a whole lot of the philosophy of Freemasonry, the theology of Freemasonry, that I think is, it'd be helpful to know, because frankly, it animates most of what we modern people take for granted. Freemasonic ideology is all around us. You don't have to be a Freemason to subscribe to it. You just have to listen to people like Oprah and a lot of the New Age nonsense that's out there. You've just got to listen to the World Economic Forum. Frankly, there's a whole lot of American, you know, conservatism that is extremely Freemasonic in its ideology, even if they don't use that name. So that would be the short version of why I thought it was important to republish this book and why I'm so happy to talk with you about it today.
I thought one of the encyclicals, I don't think I've even read it. I know of it, but I don't think I've read it before, by Leo, was the, was it Amica Vis? I liked how you combined the Pius X declaration of modernism, the synthesis of all heresies, to Leo's about the synthesis of all enemies.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's really talked that. I don't think anybody's really put that paragraph out there before until
I read that.
How is that? I mean, for the layman at home to think that, how can you give them like a little overview on that? I mean, we're talking for French Revolution time that led up. You got the Karl Marx time, and this all correlated into one. And how does somebody wrap their head around all the enemies of the church is in this?
Well, let me outline the agenda that is in the book. I actually put it in the book here. I'll just read from the back. That the Masonic plot to de-Christianize the world consisted of the complete separation of church and state, democratic ideology, by which I mean that ultimate sovereignty rests in the people rather than in God. Of course, I'm completely fine. I think there's a very strong argument for allowing a popular participation in government. So we're not saying we're against that. But it is the idea that all sovereignty and authority itself is in the people rather than in God.
Yeah.
Religious indifferentism, civil marriage and easy divorce laws, secularized education, the encouragement of moral decay among the population, the destruction of the temporal and spiritual authority of the Pope, all animated by an atheistic, socialist, communist, and ultimately pantheistic ideology of nature worship that will climax with the arrival of the Antichrist. You know, I don't know about you or some of your listeners. I think that sounds remarkably relevant to what we're going through.
Happy today.
Yeah. Well, and so here's the crux of it. I could expand on this a lot, but let me get some of the basics out there. I think the fundamental difference between the Catholic faith and Freemasonry and occultism of all kind, I coin a term in here. I came from Protestantism, so you know, many of the Protestant heresies were preceded by the Latin word sola. You know, so sola fide, sola scriptura, and it means just only. And so scripture alone, faith alone, etc. So I coined the term sola natura, nature alone. And so the essence of all Freemasonry and occultism really goes back to the garden, where Satan tried to tempt Eve and said, if you have this set of knowledge, you know, eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, by this gnosis, this intellection in your head, you will become like a god. You will enter into divinity. That's the essence of it. It's nature alone, meaning the Catholic faith believes that we must participate in the divine nature. As St. Peter says, we become partakers of the divine nature through baptism and the other sacraments. So God extends himself to us. We participate in his life, and the Holy Spirit, the Trinity, resides in our souls. So our souls need to become temples in the Catholic faith. So the divinity, there's a creator-creature distinction in the Catholic faith. And the divinity needs to be imparted to us. In Masonry and occultism, the divinity is already within the human nature, is already in within human nature.
Hello, my name is Father Mark Lawler. I'm the pastor of the parish of St. Therese in Mooresville, North Carolina. I've been a priest of the Diocese of Charlotte for the last 27 years. When I was a seminarian almost 30 years ago, I began to write some of the stories of some of the experiences that I had as a seminarian and continued that as a priest. And in April of this year, I published a little book, a collection of these memoirs, basically my vocation story, some ministry stories, and a little family history or family experiences in there as well. So far, the response has been very positive, very humbling for me. The title of my book is Lessons and Stories from the Journey, Reflections from the Life of a Joyful Priest. If you're interested in obtaining a copy of this book, we have some copies here at St. Therese in Mooresville, but you can order it online as a paperback or as an ebook at Amazon.com. You can look under search Father Mark Lawler, L-A-W-L-O-R, or the title Lessons and Stories from the Journey, Reflections from the Life of a Joyful Priest. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. John Acquaviva, host of Faith and Sport here on Carolina Catholic Radio. Our show addresses the aspects of sport, character, morality, and ethics often neglected in everyday sports conversations. For instance, we discuss the morality of transgender athletes, some dioceses' decision to disallow practice or games on Sundays, and the poor habit of injecting politics into the game. But first, I want to thank you for listening to our network of shows, and in particular, our show, Faith and Sport. The Carolina Catholic Media staff works very hard to bring you important and updated content directly related to our wonderful faith. And considering Carolina Catholic Media is fully funded by the listener, we need your financial help to keep bringing this programming to you. So please offer a monthly pledge or one-time donation to keep us moving in the right direction. And join me, Dr. John Acquaviva, as I discuss my two favorite topics, my faith and the world of sport, on the Faith and Sport Show here on Carolina Catholic Media Network. And we look forward to your donation.
It's really latent in all of creation. And it just needs to be accessed and teased out, so to speak. And then here's the broad historical overview. I could go into a lot of detail on a lot of this, so I'm going to give a very, maybe even simplistic account of it. But essentially, up to the time that Jesus came into the world, the incarnation of the second person of the Trinity, virtually the whole world is controlled by an alliance between humans and the demonic. What am I referring to? I'm referring to pagan idolatry. St. Paul, I believe, quoting the book of Psalms, says that the gods of the nations are all demons. And so now why would humans ally with demons? Well, it's just literally redoing the garden over and over and over again. We know from St. Thomas Aquinas and the whole Catholic tradition that angelic intelligence is far more powerful than human intelligence. And while they are fallen, that still applies to the demonic intelligence. I think you'll find plenty of exorcists who will confirm this for you, Father Ripperger and whatnot. So when human beings here on Earth ally with demonic intelligence, they're doing it for, you know, what St. John describes, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life, to aggrandize all those three. So it's for power, it's for fame, for pleasure, for control. And so this was maintained. You know, the Jews, of course, were monotheistic, but even they kept falling into idolatry consistently, as Scripture, you know, tells us. Which, by the way, I think is one of the great proofs of Scripture. It's not very complimentary of even the people of God. You know, the Jews render a very accurate account of even themselves, you know. So even the Jews kept falling into idolatry and paganism. So there were these pagan mysteries, again, this pagan gnosis that the priesthood, usually the elites of those societies, were engaged in. You know, so this is why pharaohs were often considered, you know, walking gods. This is why Roman emperors and whatnot, after they died, were almost immediately voted by the Roman Senate to be divinized. You know, after Augustus died, you know, there were some stars seen in the heavens and people were like, oh, well, that's Augustus. He's now a god. Virtually all the pagan gods were human beings at some point who were divinized by the state. And so there's a complete amalgamation of nature and the divine in the pagan mysteries. And that's sola natura, nature alone. Then the incarnation enters into the world in the fullness of time, as Scripture says. And a new set of mysteries are given to the world, the Christian mysteries, the sacraments. And these mysteries impart actual divinity to the creature. They close the infinite gap between the infinite creator and the finite creature. And they make the human soul a temple. That's what it does. And so the church fathers are full of stories about the priesthood spreading throughout the world, having, you know, conflicts with the demonic, conflicts with pagan priests. Even after Constantine came to power, there were several other pagan emperors. Julian the Apostate was the most notable. He was raised a Christian. But there was one named Licinius, who I believe had the Eastern Empire, and he had a final confrontation with Constantinople. And before their final battle, Licinius is, I mean, not to get too graphic, but I mean, literally cutting open women's wombs and trying to read the entrails of their babies. This is all deeply pagan, occult type stuff. So, you know, as the priesthood is expanding, you know, there's an account in one of the ecclesiastical histories of a whole, you know, cavern found beneath pagan temples with dead bodies. So, you know, this is bloody, grotesque stuff, but it is literally the source of power behind the pagan system and the pagan rulers. And we know from Scripture that with the passion and resurrection of our Lord, Satan was bound. Okay. Now I can go into the eschatological here a bit, but let me just get to the end of this. Is essentially this: the Catholic Church restrained the demonic. It restrained this pagan mystery system. Freemasonry, and by the way, Freemasonry is just a catch-all term for all occultism. And Monsignor Dillon is clear about this. Pope Leo XIII is clear about this. So it's a catch-all for all occultism. It explicitly sees itself, I provide some quotes in the introduction from original sources, it explicitly sees itself as a restoration of this pagan mystery system that has been suppressed by the Catholic Church for, you know, 1500 years or so. And at this pagan mystery system since the French Revolution, and really since the Protestant Revolt, you know, it's been rising and rising and being reborn, essentially. And so when we're seeing this all around us, I would argue we're essentially, you know, there's been a name, Naomi Wolf recently put out an article about the old gods returning. You know, there's a Protestant Messianic Jew named Jonathan Kahn who just had a book about the same topic, about the old gods returning. None of them really go into it from this perspective. I hope I can have a conversation with them at some point. But I think they're right. I think they're right. And then with Leo XIII, we have the St. Michael prayer. I can go into more detail if you want. But essentially, yes, there's, as St. Paul says in 2 Thessalonians 2, there's a restrainer, a katakon, that is restraining what he calls the mystery of iniquity And this mystery of iniquity is apparently active in the first century, because that's when Paul's writing. And he says that at some point, this katakon, who he refers to as a neuter it and a singular male, a singular he, will be moved out of the way. And then the man of lawlessness, the Antichrist, will appear. And so, and then St. John, likewise, in I believe Apocalypse 17 or 18, you know, writing about AD 90, he refers to the beast who is not, so in AD 90, is not, who was, and who will be again. And I believe that beast is somehow, obviously it's related to Antichrist, but it's also related to this pagan mystery system by which the world was held captive. And why is this so important? Because the Christian sacraments are meant to liberate the human soul. We know that grace enlightens the intellect and it strengthens the will. So grace is what allows us to love God and obey his commandments. That's what grace, and to love our neighbor as a result. Grace, that's why the whole world, you know, it didn't become suddenly a paradise. That's for later after Jesus comes back. But it the world completely changed with the advent of Christianity and the Catholic Church. And the very best of the Greeks and the Romans and the Jews were all fused and brought together in what D.C. Schindler calls the Christian form by the Catholic Church. And so you've got the height of with the Greeks, you've got philosophy. With the Jews, you have revelation. And with the Romans, you have civilization. How do you put a big civilization together over a large geographic space? And so all those three come together in the Catholic Church. And so without these mysteries, without the Christian sacraments, we cannot love God. You know, one of the things that I thought as a Protestant was that you Catholics were all works-based and whatnot. And then when I actually studied the Catholic faith, I was like, it's far from that. And since becoming Catholic, I've never been more aware of my dependence on God and the sacraments and his grace. I mean, just everything's grace, 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 grace. And so, you know, so when these sacraments are no longer available to people, which, you know, we witnessed a lot during COVID, we are literally unable to love God as we should without them. And when these old, well, they seem new, but they're actually old. When these old pagan sacraments all over us about the divinity being within you and self-actualization and all this nonsense, that's the reintroduction of the old Gnostic pagan system of nature alone. And final thing I'll say is, sorry, I'm sometimes like the preacher who gets started on a sermon and gets too lazy to stop. So, but the final thing is that I believe this is the reason why I believe it's nature alone. It goes back to Satan. St. Thomas Aquinas said that Satan fell not because he thought he could actually be God. Satan's too smart to actually think that. Okay. What he wanted was to enjoy the beatific vision without grace. He wanted to enjoy it by virtue of his nature alone, his angelic nature alone. And there's also theories from St. Thomas and other saints that he was disgusted by this idea that the divine would assume human nature, which, you know, our physical nature is objectively lower than spiritual nature of angels. And so, so Satan wanted to enter into God's presence through his angelic nature alone. And he was disgusted by the fact that the infinite God would assume a lower nature, and by doing so, make that lower nature capable of entering into his presence for eternity. So in many ways, Satan's rebellion was a term I've used for it is like a spiritual xenophobia, a spiritual racism in a way. And so, but that's what all Gnosticism, all Freemasonry is about, is that we have divinity within ourselves that must be actualized by a gnosis, and this gnosis is their rites, their ceremonies, their symbols, and that is how we enter into the fullness of what we as human beings can be. But of course, we as Catholics utterly reject that, and we maintain and have always maintained that man can only reach his highest end, the beatific vision, through grace. So that's the short version.
I'm trying to. I was going through, man, I could say a couple things, but it's going to get it kicked off here if I say
it. Oh.
No. I was going to examples, but I know it'll be targeted. But no, there's a couple things you were bringing up. It seems like look today, we can be our own God in a sense. We're playing God with the air, spraying things up there. We're playing God with the food. We're playing God with injections. We're playing God with what we think we are in a
general AI.
AI. There's literally playing God on everything. And in another sense, it's almost like a puritanical in a sense, because if you don't go our way, there's something wrong with you. We got to condemn you. We got to get rid of you. We got to almost eliminate you in a sense too. And then force it upon you because you don't know. You're not smart enough to figure out that you need to do this. You're not, I don't want to say the word woke, but you sure. Just don't get it. This is, you don't need this. It's like the one philosopher of the WF, Harari. It's about this God in the clouds. And he's an atheist, which goes into the communist idea. The religion has to be atheism.
Yeah, well, so Saint, well, sorry, Freudian slip. I think he is a saint, but Pope Leo XIII refers to this. I call it sola natura, nature alone. Pope Leo XIII calls it naturalism.
Yeah.
And again, it's the idea that nature is itself sufficient to attain its final end. And that final end is heaven. And that's the exact, as far as I'm aware, it's the first full republishing. Frankly, people can't get it for free.
I hit the wrong button, but anyway, we'll get back to it on the other side of this break.
On January 31st, 2019, Carolina Catholic Media signed on Charlotte's first Catholic radio station, AM 1270 WCGC. By the grace of God, we celebrate the past 4 years and look forward to continuing our apostolic vision and mission to serve the Carolina Catholic community. We are evangelistic partners with our clergy, active parishioners, the fallen away, and the homebound. We are accessible to all Christians, agnostics, and atheists. With distribution of a wide array of content across 7 media platforms, there truly is something for everyone. During these past 4 years, Carolina Catholic has expanded to 7 media platforms that include radio, internet stream, mobile app, website, YouTube, social media, and e-newsletter. Nearly all local programs are available by podcast and video on demand. In the year ahead, we're committed to promote more local parish, school, and ministry events, more live broadcasts, and more valuable content that showcases our dynamic local Carolina Catholic community. Of all the Catholic radio stations in the U.S., Carolina Catholic is arguably a leader in locally produced programs. To continue our work, Carolina Catholic Media needs $15,000 in monthly funding to continue operations across our 7 media platforms. We are 100% dependent on your generosity. If you love what we're doing, please join us with a monthly tithe or annual gift. We have partnership plans available for parishes, schools, and ministries. If you own a business, you can be a program sponsor on one or all of our platforms. You can do a live broadcast of a special event, with promotion before and rebroadcast after. On behalf of everyone at Carolina Catholic Media, we thank you for your past support and look forward to you joining us with the resources the apostolate needs to continue to evangelize the truth of Jesus Christ and our Catholic faith across the Carolinas. May God bless you and your family abundantly.
Welcome back, Steve, with Sus Fidelium Hour. Here, let's get right back to the interview.
And so Freemasonry rejects this. And why? Well, it's obvious. It restricts their autonomy. It means that the divinity actually isn't within us, waiting to be actualized. It means it's out there and we must submit to it. When you see this spirit, I mean, you see this including among many people on the so-called right, where it's just, well, we could, you know, I became a Catholic for many, many reasons, but one of them, you know, from Protestantism, and there are many wonderful Protestants. Many of them are my close friends, mentors, whatever. But Protestantism, I think, is deeply, deeply, deeply problematic. And this is one of the reasons why. Protestantism really instantiated in the West, quite contrary, I think, to the explicit intentions of Calvin and Luther. Although they were horrible philosophers, so if they were better philosophers, they would have realized what they were doing. But they were horrible philosophers. But it really instantiated into the West this idea of the autonomous conscience that is ultimately accountable to God alone. Well, that sounds noble, but what it really means is that you become like a god. That's in practice. That's what it means. As a Protestant, I saw this everywhere. And frankly, this sort of idea has infected more and more Catholics. It's I mean, I see Catholics all the time who fundamentally reject timeless Catholic teaching. You know, and of course, the follow-up statement is usually, well, I went to Catholic school. And I'm like, well, then you're even, you know, you're three times more likely to be a heretic in my experience, you know. So, sorry, it's true. And so, yeah, this autonomy of the intellect, this autonomy of the human will is something the occult deeply despises. And it deeply despises the Catholic claim to be able to bind and loose that intellect and will.
It's kind of like a priest friend of mine. It's, you can use terrain and germ theory in the religious standpoint of this. Is he mentioned like most of us are modernists because we're swimming in a sea of modernism. It's affecting all of us. I just put a sermon up last night on St. Monica. We're recording this on the 5th of what day month is it? May.
5th of May. Our Lady's Month.
Yes, past the 5th day. And he goes into the how idea. If you read Butler's, he talks about how Monica was basically, you know, chided, beaten, you know, just abused by her husband.
Yeah.
But she never left him. She did everything. She didn't even complain about him. She basically prayed in the penance, offered up everything for his conversion, and it worked. And Father goes into this, it goes into it, goes, you know, feminism is the root of this divorce idea, which you bring up in the book. And it's the Freemasonic and the communistic idea, no fault divorce. You can divorce for anything you want instead of doing penance. How many saints in the church we have that have stuck it out, that have taken an abuse and just worked on their husband to convert them, or vice versa, if it's an abusive wife, maybe, I don't know. And, but in our mindset, even comments were going, people were upset. So you can see good Catholics that are watching stuff like this, that even hurts, and it stings them a little bit, going, that is it's not the mindset we have today.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you apply this to the issues of church and state. This is why the Masonic agenda was always to completely separate the two, was always unalloyed religious liberty, as they call it. Unalloyed freedom of speech. And again, what do I mean by this? There's a sense in which obviously Catholics can and do support religious liberty. The Catholic Church, even during the medieval period, there's a whole lot of myths about this. Even during the medieval period, the Catholic Church insisted that conversion could not be compelled. Okay. Right. So if somebody who was not baptized, if they were going to be baptized, become Catholic, that could not be at the tip of a sword. And then there are many examples of popes, you know, protecting Jews, you know, not in a 21st century, 20th century sense of liberalism. You know, they weren't 20th century liberals, but many times where, you know, I was working with a Jewish colleague on a project and we were both shocked by what we found. It just wasn't the version of history we thought. There were all these popes saying no to the blood libel, no, you know, leave them alone, let them celebrate the Passover, let them celebrate you know, the Day of Atonement, let them do what they do. And the Pope threatened Catholics with excommunication. You know, ironically, the church is far harsher with heretics than with Jews. And so at the end of the day, the issue is, does God give to his creature the right to reject him? Well, we could say no. The right. What is a right? Leo XIII says a right is a moral power. So, does God give a moral power to reject him? No, he doesn't. Does God allow permissively people to reject him? Yes, but even that will not go on forever. There is a punishment for that, and it's eternal. So. There's no sense in which one can describe any of these things that most of us modern people believe we have. You know, many even conservatives say, well, I have a right from God to free speech. It's like, you do? You know, even with a Protestant, I'll be like, you think you have a right from God to go outside and publicly blaspheme Jesus Christ, to publicly say obscenities, to do all you believe God gave you a right to use your mouth that way? And it's like the absurdity of it is exposed immediately. Mm-hmm. Now, should we as a free society allow people to? I think it's, you know, generally a good idea, because for many reasons. That's a whole other topic. But yeah, the occult agenda was free this, free that. I have a right to this, right to that. And ultimately, what it does is here's what happens when you claim that nature is sufficient. Nature alone is sufficient for its final end. Nature begins regressing into the unnatural. Nature cannot perceive, let alone do, the natural law perfectly without grace. And so I was actually talking with John Henry Weston about this. It's very interesting. So before the so-called Enlightenment, nature was seen by Christians in a very sacramental way, meaning you see something in nature, and what is a sacrament? A sacrament is a divine sign that affects what it signifies. So to have a sacramental view of nature is where you see nature, but your conception of it is automatically pointing to the divine. So you see it as this came from God ex nihilo. What's its and since it came from God, it has a purpose that I can discern with my reason. And since I have a free will that can discern right and wrong and choose accordingly, I must use this thing, whether it be my body or, you know, a knife or a gun or another human being, I must use this thing or this person in a way that is conducive, that is in accord with its end, with its purpose. And so that was the sacramental Christendom view of nature. Well, after the so-called Reformation, what happened? People, almost immediately, within a century, philosophy is getting to a place where it cannot attain certainty. And it's trying to find, it can't get a certainty about anything because everybody's contending with each other. There's no one who can say, thus saith the Lord, about all these Bible interpretations. And so almost immediately, the theological controversy bleeds into philosophy. And you have people like Descartes, who's saying, I think, therefore I am. So he's not even starting with the creator. He's starting with himself. Now, he was probably a Catholic, so he probably didn't intend this. But again, lots of bad philosophers don't intend things, and they don't realize that that's what they're actually doing because they're bad philosophers. So what Descartes was trying to do was trying to reduce all knowledge to a syllogism. You know, syllogism just being minor premise or major premise, minor premise, conclusion. And so he was trying to reduce all knowledge to mathematical certainty. Why? Because man, after the Protestant revolt, had lost the ability to say, this is what Christ Church says, this is allowed, this isn't. And so what happens is as we proceed into the Enlightenment, so-called, the view of nature fundamentally changes to a mechanistic, purely mechanical conception. And how we look at nature, and it's no longer automatically seen in relation to its divine origin and therefore its purpose, since God is logos, reason. It's seen as, what can we do with this for the sake of aggrandizing our power? And so it's the relationship with nature changes from one of kind of, I think, fellowship, you could say. This is a big topic and there's many better experts on it, but one of fellowship to basically one of power. And so it's very interesting. When I was talking with John Henry Weston, he was saying, well, why are we having this sort of fall into absolute insanity these days when much of it came from a sort of rationalism, a sort of worship of the human mind? And I said, because Catholic theology is true. What do I mean by that? I mean that this sort of naturalistic conception of nature separated nature from the sacraments, said that nature alone, sola natura, was sufficient. And what happens? We know the sacraments, again, enlighten the intellect, strengthen the will. So if both of those are absent, that means that nature in a state of original sin no longer has its intellect enlightened, no longer has its will strengthened. And so we know that nature itself cannot attain its end without grace. So what happens? It regresses into anti-nature. And all of this happens while at the same time our species makes these gigantic advances scientifically and technologically, because we have reconceived of nature as this purely mechanistic mathematical thing, which so, yeah, that knowledge, that gnosis continues to increase, but it does so in a way that's separated from the teleological purpose of not only the human soul, but nature itself. It's been completely divorced. And so, sorry, that may be a bit heady, but that's essentially why I think our society is increasingly irrational, but our technological prowess continues to expand. So...
sorry about that. We will finish this on the other side of this break.
Teachers that care professors that care about you. Just an awesome experience all around.
There's peace here. There's encouragement here.
Faculty, everybody that works here, they really set you up for success.
I don't think I have ever felt as loved and as supported and as encouraged as I have at the Abbey.
There's something here that's underlying and intrinsic. There's like a spirit of love and community. And I think the spirit is God's presence here.
Belmont Abbey College, a world away, but close to home. Visit us at belmontabbeycollege.edu.
Faith and charity are key elements of life, but are they at the center of your retirement planning and life insurance decisions? Knights of Columbus, a trusted organization with a proud history of more than 140 years of helping its members, can help Catholic families with insurance and retirement planning solutions. Most importantly, we do this in a way that is compatible with Catholic teaching and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Investment Guidelines. Today, we have expanded our offerings to include retirement annuities, long-term care insurance, and disability income insurance. Beyond the benefits of financial protection, members may take satisfaction in knowing that Knights of Columbus contributes to causes that align with Catholic moral teaching. Let your faith inspire your financial decisions. Terms and conditions apply. Learn more by calling field agent Bob Gordon at 516-551-7838.
Hey everybody, Bill Snyder here. I'm one of the co-hosts of The Remnant. It's a men's show on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network with my two friends, Ray Haywood and Stephen Thomas. We talk about some of the issues facing men today and how to fight back against a culture that hates authentic masculinity. You can listen to it on the Carolina Catholic Radio Network every single Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check it out.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Sense of Delium Hour. Let's go ahead and get right back to the ending of this, well, kind of the end, it's ending of this program, but the fourth part of this interview. Now, the interview is an hour and 37 minutes, and all you got to do is look up, type in book review, world, go to Sense of Delium YouTube channel, type in Joshua Charles, and you will find it, or just do it on a search, War of the Antichrist with Joshua Charles. And you will have the entire interview. It's also available on Apple iTunes. But here we go.
The editor's introduction in this is, what you got, about 50 pages? I mean, something you wrote like a book inside the book, on the book.
Yeah.
And you bring up Leo about when he says, where I just had it in here, being lulled to sleep, is it? Yes. How, by which virtue may be lulled to sleep. So you I think it was in San Francisco a couple of years ago, they thought about banning cussing because If you're a nationalist, I'm sorry.
In San Francisco?
Yes. They were trying to ban cussing, which
so a lot of people go around naked, but no cussing.
Yeah. Weird. How long ago was this? A decade ago, something like this. Now, I remember back then, a bunch of guys on the right were upset. That's free speech. Congress shall not. Now, I'm not a 14th Amendment guy. So yeah. I'm looking at this in a federalism point of view going, hey, the states can do anything they want, which if you're in North Carolina, if you see the last 2 weeks, we've pretty much taken down the lefties' principle because of federalism.
Yeah.
Now, back, I think porn was thrown out, and it was Clinton that ended up saying, oh, porn's free speech. So now we got free speech all over from here in the ice world and off and back. So we go from back in the day where guys were holding the door open for women, helping them out of the car, dressing well, things like this, speaking well, not cussing, not looking like slobs, things like this. A buddy of mine, Mike Church, called it the obedience to the unenforceable. And now being lulled to sleep in a sense, now it goes back to San Francisco just the other day where a swimmer gets attacked for wanting to swim with other, just her, she doesn't want dudes swimming with her or being in the locker room. And people are fighting against that. People in women's sports are actually promoting guys coming in and taking their place.
Yeah.
And you talk about G.K. Chesterton, just so far, your mind's so open, your brain falls out. We're there.
Yeah. Well, and again, this, it comes back to nature alone. I can't emphasize this enough. The pagan mysteries were predicated on the idea that man was capable of reaching his final end, beatitude, the beatific vision. They didn't conceive of it as the beatific vision, but whatever the highest salvation that man is capable of, he's capable of it through his nature alone. He doesn't need a participation in the divine nature. So I gave a lecture in Florida recently about this. Catholics really, really need to understand the power of the sacraments in this regard. This the power of being baptized, of being healed of most of original sin. I mean, the Romans Road, as I often heard it in Protestantism, in Romans 1. I mean, Paul explained this. Paul explains this. In terms of the, by the way, I was extremely tired when I had like zero sleep, had a 4 a.m. flight. So anyway, but Paul explains this as a constant degeneration, and God just gives people up at some point. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you hear things like Oprah and honestly, even the QAnon movement, mm-hmm. and you know, there's a lot of, there are, that's what's so interesting about right now. I do believe there are very serious, you know, I believe there are an aligning of interests in a, I guess you could say, conspiratorial fashion. At the same time, what that has led to is a lot of nonsense. And when you hear a lot of the QAnon stuff or whatever, a term you'll hear on the right a lot these days is awakening.
Yes.
And it's extremely occultic. And I know it's occultic because of the way they talk about it. And again, they all talk about it as if the divinity is already within you.
They have the knowledge.
That's the whole point. That's the whole point. And if the divinity is already within you, then yeah, you do have a right to say what you want. You do have a right to go with whatever religion you want, no matter how false. You do have a right to use your body in a pornographic way and put it out. I mean, so, and then Pope Leo XIII has an observation in the introduction that's very eerie. He does say, and Monsignor Dillon outlines this as well, one of the key agendas of the Freemasonic and occultic societies was to morally degrade the population. Mm-hmm. And now why? Very simple, actually. And I encourage Catholics to always think about things in kind of this way, at least have it be one of the ways to think about it. We know that the soul has two main aspects, the intellect and the will. The intellect is how we know, and the will is how we choose, right? So we know, even without the sacraments, there's a certain sense in which we know what's right and wrong. We don't fully know it, but there's a sense, there's a vestigial awareness there. Paul talks about it. You know, those who, you know, Gentiles who do the law without knowing the law are like a law unto themselves, right? And so the law, eternity is on the hearts of all men. There's a sense in which we know, okay? Not fully, but we know. And so what happens is when our intellect knows, but our will does something different than our intellect, we literally make ourselves a split personality. Those things get further and further apart. And when the intellect and the will are further and further apart, that creates profoundly weakened, insecure people. And Pope Leo XIII basically talked about, he didn't quite explain it that way, but he did say that this moral decay is essentially meant to make people more compliant at the climactic moment of this plot to completely overturn Christian civilization, which Monsignor Dillon essentially equates with the appearance of Antichrist, that by the time that moment comes, so many people in this world will have intellects and wills that are so far apart from one another. Their intellects are so darkened, their wills are so weakened, that whenever that climactic moment comes, they will just submit and they'll give in because they have habituated themselves to not do what their intellect knows. They've habituated themselves to will contrary to what they know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why so many people are extremely insecure these days. I mean, it's a human condition, don't get me wrong, but I think it's even worse these days because, mm-hmm. and this, I mean, this is why Jordan Peterson, you know, I hope he becomes Catholic. I've met Jordan Peterson, wonderful man. You know, he has a lot of good stuff out there. I don't agree with everything, but this is why he talks about, you know, most of us know we're not doing everything we can and should, and that weighs on us. And so anyway, that's a psychological insight into all this. It's the same basic idea. So, but for our intellect to fully know and our will to do, God has given us his power in the sacraments. So that's why the occult, whether it's making in the French Revolution, making the mass illegal, making it illegal for priests to do certain things. We saw this a lot in the Protestant so-called Reformation. Cutting the population off from the sacraments is huge. And so that's why, frankly, you know, not intending to go into too much detail, but I read this book during the lockdowns. And we all know what happened during the lockdowns. I think people can, to a certain extent, have different prudential opinions about this. It was my first Easter as a Catholic. So you can imagine what that was like, especially reading this thing. Yeah, exactly. So for the first time in Catholic history since perhaps the Diocletian persecution, virtually the entire worldwide public celebration of Easter was canceled. You know,
and then tied into how you know. I mean, one of the people know me that I don't like just having clickbait videos on here. I want the reason for this is kind of like the Sun Tzu idea of if you know your enemy and you know yourself, you have a chance of beating something. You have a chance of winning the war. If you don't know your enemy, you don't, and you know yourself, you got a 50-50. You don't know either. You got no chance. This is trying to learn who your enemy is. So like, when we have a devotion and we start talking about the holy face, like that's a cute devotion if you don't know the why about it. When our Lord tells Sister Maria, I want you to make war on the communists. If you listen to Leo DuPont say, one day they will shut down the churches. And then all of a sudden.
Oh, I hadn't heard of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When
yeah.
was that?
18.
Okay. You didn't send that to me afterward.
Yeah. I'll shoot you that. But yeah, I mean, he predicted that was going to happen. If we don't, and he said another one, something about if we don't stop these revolutionaries now, they will take over the world. And at the same time, before Leo, you had the antithesis to all this, Gabriel Garcia Moreno, who talked to Pius IX, corresponded with him, kicked out the heretics, built the roads, brought in the teaching orders, made sure it didn't start the day until he went to mass. And who killed him? It was the Freemasons. Oh, you probably, I don't know if you ever heard that story. You go after the free market at all cost guys. There was a
And I used to be that way.
Yeah, me too.
Growing up a Reaganite conservative.
Yeah, me too.
I want as free a market as possible. But as an ideology of saying, you know, all economic transactions, as long as they're free, are acceptable. Yeah, it's nuts. It's totally nuts.
Andrew Wilkie.
It divorces morality from economics.
He is Andrew Wilkie was a lion because capitalism is boss. So, like, there I was bringing up the Garcia Moreno thing. There was an earthquake. He found out somebody was charging exorbitant amounts of money for water, comes down and publicly flogs the guy for taking advantage of these people for the situation.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at somebody that's a free market at all costs, they're going to look at was that whole thing with, I think it was Lou Rockwell's site that has a thing about the Scrooge was right, something like this.
Wow.
Oh yeah. Look that up.
No, but again, this is why a whole society is habituated to an autonomous will. Okay. Autonomy just literally means auto, self, nomi, law. That's all it means. And so it's habituating the entire society to self law.
Yep. Now this is the end of the segment for the radio channel right here. But again, if you want to go watch it, just go to the Sus Fidelium YouTube channel. Type in War of the Antichrist with Joshua Charles and you'll see it. Bada bing. Just go to the YouTube channel in general. You'll see it. It's right on the front page probably. Anyways, God love you. Have a great rest of the day.